Welcome to this podcast from Barla McCarthy. We hope you find insight and a catalyst for change in the topics we discuss. Now here is today's presentation.
Angela Wayne is the Chief Executive Officer of Advantia Health, leading operational strategy and execution for this multi-state women's healthy practice. Angela has over 25 years of physician practice and health system experience, having led primary care, dermatology, and now women's health services to grow significantly in size and scope. Prior to joining Advantia, Angela was the COO at AP Derm, a leading network of dermatology practices, to triple in size in 3 years. Prior to that, she led the development of the primary care network for Beth Israel Deaconess, now Beth Israel Lahey Health, in New England, growing from 10 to 42 practices, while moving from fee-for-service to value-based care. Angela holds a BA in business management from Boston College and a master's in business administration from Boston University. Angela, it's great to be talking with you today.
Thank you for having me, Allison. It's great to connect.
Yeah, I'm excited about this conversation because we're seeing more capital venture firms getting into the healthcare space, specifically in owning physician groups and some key specialties. So why do you think that is? Why are they interested in doing that kind of investment?
Well, I think they really see the market ripe with opportunity. If you think about, you know, private equity or you know, what they would invest in, it's really looking for ways to build and create value within a company. So I think what they really see in the environment right now is systems that are ripe for, you know, greater economies of scale, more technology investment, you know, more innovation and evolution. And what they can bring is capital to those systems to really help bring those things to fruition in a way that I think traditional health systems have been slow to do, or in some cases, maybe can't do as effectively.
Yeah, it makes sense. And they obviously must be seeing some kind of return on that investment, or they wouldn't keep doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, they're really great. I mean, what I love about working in that kind of environment is everything is very metric driven, and you can really quantify different, you know, synergies. So if a private equity firm were to invest in a platform or a physician practice, in advance of that purchase, they've really figured out all of the ways that they can drive value for that business. And if you think about it, it's everything from, you know, purchasing power, payer contracts, pooled services, or better buying power for health insurance for the employees of the group. And so they're able to, you know, in advance of a purchase, really be able to quantify what that value means and how through involvement in the business they can add value and then, you know, create a platform by which they could potentially bring other acquisitions onto and do similar things.
Yeah. So I want to pick up on that comment that you made about everything is metric driven. Obviously, you know, you think of the financials and that's what they're looking at. But can you speak to other metrics that they measure as well in addition to the financials?
Yeah, I think it's everything in the operating system. When you're looking at patient access as an example,
okay,
really, you know, looking at KPIs in a couple of different ways, right? I think I was more used to looking at lag indicators, right? So you get your financials, you look at your month end, how did we perform? And I've been more focused on what are the lead indicators of the business, right? What's over the horizon that I need to be looking at? So if you think of things, you know, I work in a women's health company right now, and important to our business is, you know, maybe not what's happening today. Of course, that's important, but I can't affect change over that. So what are the lead indicators there would be, you know, how many new OB patients am I seeing? And that's really going to be an indicator of what the business is going to look like 8 months from now. So you have to look at, you know, what am I creating enough access in the schedule for those new patients to get into you know, see us so that we can make sure that we are viable 8 months from now. Also looking at, you know, schedule utilization. So how much of the schedule is used or unused? What's our access? What's our, you know, time to next available appointment? All of those things that by creating access in the system, you're affecting the financial health of the business as well.
Yes. So similar, but what you emphasized was you were always looking behind and not looking forward. I'm guessing that in this investment, some of what they provide is better data resources, better systems. You're not trailing behind on system capabilities. You're actually more advanced potentially.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I found incredibly helpful in working with private equity sponsors is, you know, they're incredibly smart people that have a wealth of knowledge in the physician practice and healthcare space. And not only through the lens of the business that, you know, I may be in, whether it's, you know, dermatology or women's health, but they have a portfolio of healthcare companies that have different specialties, and they've learned different lessons with each one of them. And each of those companies may have integrated different technology solutions that they can say, hey, you know, this worked well here. Why don't you take a look at this? So number one, I found that incredibly helpful. Also that we really lean further on technology than the people side. Like if you're thinking about how to build value in the business and track metrics and what are the things we want, you know, how do we engage with patients as an example, you know, the kind of the days of opening a call centralized call center where you have people sit and answer the phone and do all of those things, you know, that's like yesterday's thinking. Right now it's about how do we engage with patients where they're at to create the easiest access points for them, whether that's through handheld device and texting us, or how do we really leverage technology to, you know, create the best experience for our patients and our providers.
Yeah. And which obviously then makes them extremely competitive as they're working in the market with a blend of both healthcare systems present and then them present as well.
I think that's one of the things, you know, moving from a big health system to, you know, these privately held equity-backed physician practices that I've really enjoyed is you really have the freedom and autonomy to implement technologies that are the best fit for that business. As compared to being a part of a larger system, you know, really you need to be fully interoperable with sort of those mothership technologies and
yes,
all of those things. So I found that you can innovate more quickly in this space as well, given that you don't have those constraints.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you the question about other key differences that you would see. And I'm guessing that culturally it's different. There are, you know, obligations you have to the mother system that you probably don't have, like referrals and other kinds of things that you don't have to worry about in this situation. Are there others that you can think of?
Well, I think, you know, one of the misconceptions, I'll just say what's the same first and then head into that is one of the misconceptions I think people have is that in for-profit or private equity backed healthcare companies, there's not the same commitment to quality. And that's just not true. I think I have seen more data around the, you know, excellent quality that's delivered working outside of a big health system, right? So I think because we're very focused on metrics and demonstrating everything we do, I think that the commitment to quality and delivering high quality care is the same as it would be in a larger health system. So that's just one thing I'd say that's the same. I think what I have found to be different in the environments is, you know, two things. I call it my MBA 2.0 in working in private equity, which is, you know, number one, speed to execution. So understanding that if you decide to do something today because it builds value, every day that you don't execute upon that, you have a diminishing return on what you anticipated doing. And secondly is the commitment to business discipline. So really defining through metrics, through data, what it is we're going to do and why, and then proving out our success through that data. So I think those are two things just in terms of the business. I thought I was doing those things quite well in my, you know, former healthcare system role, because I've talked with former colleagues and they said, well, you were always about metrics and you were always about speed. And I said, no, this is like next level. You know? So I have found that rewarding, but, you know, in saying that's not an environment for everyone either. I found it incredibly rewarding, but again, not for everyone. So I think the other thing too is in a larger hospital health system, there are just more people, more resources that you tap on internally. And I think that's excellent for, you know, a lot of things that really need to be done and works well. But in this kind of environment, it's much leaner, and we tend to work with consultants a lot more. So bring people on for specific projects, you know, kind of best of breed, you bring someone in, wrap that up, and then kind of you move on to the next thing. And I think that, you know, that ability to be autonomous to a larger system certainly helps breed innovation and quickness and focus on the specific needs of your business as compared to, you know, sort of the downstream or upstream effects of your business from a larger health system.
Right, exactly. What I heard you say is, and it's not really a downside, it's just a different orientation of speed, business discipline, et cetera, that may not be comfortable for everybody. And to that end, how have you seen the physicians work in it, both, you know, pros and cons?
So I would say, you know, the physicians are isolated from that pressure, right? That's the job of the business leaders to understand how we're executing, how quickly build value, create an operating system and environment that's great to work in and great to seek care in. The physicians I have seen join the organization, you know, it's interesting. There are a lot of new grads that I think in their minds either have decided, I want to work for a health system because either I want to do training and research and all of those kinds of things.
Right.
And I think they just, you know, are predisposed to go work for an academic teaching hospital.
Yeah.
And that's great. And then I think you have others that say, hey, you know, I really want to do something in private practice. You know, perhaps the economics or earning potential are more, you know, paramount for them in their desires, or maybe they just seek a culture that is more locally driven, you know, more physician led at a local level where they could be satisfied. I think what's also great for these physicians that I have seen and they have commented on is, you know, when private equity has, you know, capital dollars to invest. So if you're in dermatology, as an example, really being able to invest in new modern equipment that's going to allow them to, you know, do their highest skilled best work in a convenient environment for them. I think that's been, I've really seen physicians, you know, be satisfied with that element of it as well. I think that's maybe the biggest difference, or where I see people, you know, choosing one versus the other. I think you can be, you know, very satisfied in both environments. It really just depends on what your internal drivers are.
Yeah, exactly. I would think that anybody who's starting in your environment and gets that, I'll call it additional training, you know, their residency after residency experience in private practice, they could become very strong drivers and leaders in a healthcare system, but just then have to do that major adaptation to the fact that they can't fully drive without getting buy-in from all kinds of other people. They're playing in a bigger pond. They probably learn how to run a successful practice quite well.
Yes. And I would say, you know, the companies that I have been in as well, there's opportunities for physicians that want to have leadership positions available. There's physician advisory committees, there's opportunities to be, you know, a physician leader, medical director, manager of a practice or a group of practices. So I think that's something that we're always trying to invite and identify where those physician leaders are that, you know, maybe raise their hand and say, hey, I'm interested in developing some leadership skills. What opportunities are there for me here? It could be on a quality committee, you know, there. So I think there are those opportunities to flex and develop those skills in a private practice environment as well.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, for those listening, we should clarify, we're not talking about emergency department companies or hospitalist companies, you know, where hospitals contract for the people and then they employ them. This is really modeled more after a private practice environment and specialties like primary care, dermatology, OBGYN in your case, nephrology, urology, you know, where it's more private practice oriented than hospital based. Do I have that right?
Yes, correct.
So there's a key difference, and we're really not speaking to those hospital contracted kind of companies, which have been around for a while. Let's talk about you, Angela, professionally. When you decided to make this change, you were at a very reputable healthcare system and had a very significant position in that system. What made you decide to go over to the venture capital side?
Well, you know, thank you for that. I really had a wonderful career in that health system and had accomplished a lot. And I think it was at a kind of a turning point for me where I was looking back over that career and body of work and you know, took great pride in what was created there, but also realized that I wanted to keep growing and flexing. And, you know, I started to think about not the next job, but, you know, what's 5 years from now hold for me. And so I really felt like at that point in my life, I needed to learn more and grow. And I thought, you know, a great opportunity to do that would be with the dermatology company that I was recruited to. So I think sometimes people are confused. It was one of the questions they asked me when I started interviewing with the company is, you know, how would you feel working for a for-profit because you've been in not-profit for so long? And I recall saying, you know, I think it would be great. It feels really honest, you know, because at the end of the day, I mean, whether your label is nonprofit or for-profit, we're all trying to run viable businesses, right? We all have, you know, we all need to create economics that will support the business and make it viable. We're all financial stewards of that. So, you know, whichever label you're under, at the end of the day, you need to create a financially viable business. So anyway, I thought that was a little refreshing, especially in when you think of just the macroeconomics of a large health system being multi-specialty and the economic drivers of that business. It just felt like a good time for me to work in a single specialty that I could learn a lot from in dermatology and was very clear, you know, who you were reporting to. And so I found that very rewarding. And I also wanted this opportunity to work with private equity. It was a little newer at that time. And I thought it'd be a great opportunity to learn, and I'm really glad I made the leap. So it ended up being a really good time for me to work in a single specialty that was independent of a health system to see what I could do there, what I could bring in terms of growing that business across multiple states, learning and, you know, applying what I had learned in a large health system in developing a platform and growing a business. So I was really excited to see not only what I could learn, but what kind of impression I could make on that business and how I could help it grow and be successful.
Yeah, that's great. And obviously it has worked for you. You have a passion for that environment. You enjoy it. So do you ever see yourself going back into the healthcare system arena again, potentially?
You know, potentially, I think whenever I am looking at any opportunity or I get calls or make considerations about things, it's ultimately about, do I think I can bring value to that business? Do sort of the talents and experience that I have, will they help that business grow and flourish in a meaningful way? And, you know, I don't put boundaries on that. I think, you know, it's interesting. I've sometimes envisioned, you know, could I apply everything I've learned in this environment to a more traditional health system? And I think there's a great opportunity to do that. I think, you know, more diversity in you know, players across the spectrum really helps everyone. So yeah, I could definitely see returning to that model or other models, you know, as long as I feel like I could really benefit that business in a meaningful way.
Yeah, and I think the opportunity for you still moving forward, I mean, where you came from was pretty much, you know, single specialty. I mean, as primary care wasn't totally single, but, and you've been single specialty, I think, you know, there's opportunity for you to be in a very diverse multi-specialty practice environment and leading one of those where you have several disciplines you're working with simultaneously where the drivers in many ways are different specialty by specialty and trying to drive them all at the same time. I think that could be a good challenge for you down the road.
I agree. I love, you know, putting the puzzles together, right?
And yes.
Moving the levers simultaneously. And, yes. You know, we used to, me and my team, as we were you know, putting things together back in primary care, you know, we always called it the Rubik's Cube, right? We always worked the Rubik's Cube together. So
That's right.
I think that could be very interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure it would be. Having done it myself for a year or so, that complexity is just adds another level of challenge, but also potential contribution because you do understand the business of each specialty so well and those drivers that it's then trying to figure out how do they synchronize together or not and trying to work through some of those challenges. So one of the things I also know you're passionate about is women in leadership. And so for that those folks who are listening to this podcast, and given all that you have done in your career, if we think about how to support women leaders, what are the skills and expertise you would say we have to strengthen more of or get better at?
I'm a real believer that everything starts with communication. And the more every leader can develop those skills, the more successful they'll be and the more successful the people they're leading will be. And by communication, I mean, are you listening? Are you really, you know, communicating well with your team? I just think that's so important. And it's an easy word to say, but I think so complex. And ultimately, in effective leaders that I've seen, that's a really crucial skill that either you have or you're working on or really you don't. And it's kind of pivotal to your success. So that would be one. I think secondly, you know, really having a command of the facts, right? And mm-hmm. So I think that when you have good command of the facts and the data and the metrics that, you know, you can have real confidence in the presentation of yourself, right? If you have passion for what you're doing, people are going to see that. And if you can back it up with the data and metrics and solid communication, you know, for me, that's just the winning combination.
It is. And that is, you know, how they describe executive presence to a T. And probably also, if I were to add to that, it's learning how to manage yourself, your emotions, your reactions, probably the other piece of that, which, you know, you have to learn to grow and adapt in over time. What are you perceiving? What are you misunderstanding? That gets back to the listening piece again. What are you reacting to? How to have a difficult conversation and not totally fall apart? Yeah, all those communication things and emotional things that go with it.
Yeah, I agree. I had an employee once who was leaving the organization and, you know, had said to me that what she had learned from me, which I thought this was interesting, is less is more. We'd been in board meetings together. We'd been in executive meetings together. And she said that was the one thing that she had really learned from me is you know, sort of that understanding that saying less can be more powerful than saying more.
Absolutely. Especially when it comes with all those additional elements that you described.
Yeah.
Facts, poise, confidence.
Yeah. And I think, you know, particularly in kind of high stakes environments when you're, you know, working with folks from private equity that, as I said, are, you know, very smart, really having command for that data is important, your metrics. You know, it's not enough to say, you know, and you know this, Alice, but, you know, feels busy, we're busy, you know, looks profitable, you know, I mean,
right.
by what percent, by how much, what's your baseline? What, you know, do you anticipate this will continue? So I think just when it's about doing your homework, right? Do your preparation so it comes naturally. And then I think that really just carries through. And I think when people sense that executive presence, when they see your confidence in delivery and command of the facts, I mean, that just instills so much confidence in your board, in your team, in your, you know, colleagues. You know, sometimes you got to fake it till you make it, but you'll make it, you know, keep doing those things and you'll make it.
Yeah. And you learn. I mean, okay. They asked me that question. I didn't know that answer. You honestly say, I don't know, I'll get back to you in that. And then, you know, you've learned next time I got to be prepared with that fact because that could come up again. You just learn over time. For those who are listening, we'll sort of wrap up with this last question, Angela. I mean, everything we do in the practice management arena can be improved, but what have you seen as the keys to delivering better results in managing practices? If we end with that question.
I think really understanding what the key levers in your business are to drive value and then executing well on those. As an example, you know, I view our physician and provider's time as our most precious resource in this business, right? Yep. And so maximizing their time is one of the top priorities, which is why, you know, I really focus on what's our access, what's our schedule utilization, what are our lead indicators on that part of the business. And I think if you get kind of the top line right on revenue and throughput and patient access and all of those things, you know, that's going to carry a lot, right? You're always going to focus on the middle of the P&L and make sure that you're managing costs effectively and all of those things. I mean, that's one of our kind of, you know, table stakes that we do in operations. But I think getting really smart about what the main drivers are of your business. And that could be different for different places. You know, if you're, you know, surgically focused, it could be something different than a dermatology practice, as an example. But just get really smart about what the main levers are to drive value in your business and then execute with focus on those things.
Yes. And to add to that, when you're talking about the operation, now I said I was going to ask, that was the last question. Now I just thought of another one. But I find in practice management, we get very distracted on the people side of things. People behavior, people performance, let's even say a little bit of drama that happens at the practice level. How is it different in your environment, or is it?
I think what you get in this environment is sometimes you have some residual angst from an acquisition, right?
Sure.
So sometimes it's like, well, you know, it didn't used to be like that.
Right.
I think it would be like this. You guys didn't say it was going to be like this. So I think there can be some of that residual culture stuff. And I think people assign a lot of blame to that. And for me, it's always about, again, communication, listening. You know, how can you better integrate the cultures and sort of show what's best with, you know, the company that you've acquired or the company that you're acquiring into and help really integrate that culture as effectively as you can. And by culture, that's really people, right?
Yes.
And demonstrating that, hey, you know, you guys in the company we're acquiring are doing something exceptional. And that's why, you know, we want you to join this business. And so how do we get that to sort of be a best practice that permeates the rest of the business? So I think that would be, you know, something that I heard that was a little different from the former environment. But I think those other challenges, I mean, it's the people, right?
Yeah.
And you're going to have those kinds of issues, I think, regardless of where you go. Or if not, tell me where that is, because I want to go work there.
But, you know, it's the interesting thing that you said is during the acquisition process, you said, you know, you as a practice have something that you're really doing well, and we want to have it as part of this business. In the health system environment, we do a lot of acquisitions from a defensive mechanism because we don't want somebody else to have them, or it's business we're already getting that we have to retain and it's not stolen. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing your reasons to acquire a practice are very different or don't have those elements that you have to worry about. It's really assessing what they're doing at the practice level and the potential for you to get more value out of it.
Exactly.
So you don't have sort of all of those other agendas conflicting. You just have that one pure assessment you're doing and then have to manage it going forward. And right. Have assessed it so well in the beginning that you know what you're getting into, which I'm not sure we always do very well in the traditional health system. I'm not sure how well we really assess it before it comes into us.
Right. And then we're accountable for that, you know. So if we have an acquisition and we've determined that there are these number of synergies, so it's sort of mapped out, you know, okay, we'll integrate them to our health insurance, that's worth X amount. We'll avail them to our purchasing contracts, that's worth X amount. We're going to do it by Y date, and you track those every, you know, every 30 days. Okay, are we tracking to the value that we anticipated we would garner? And I think that's one thing that I've really, you know, appreciated about this business too, is it's not sort of execute and move on I mean, it definitely is execute and move on, but you also need to be, you know, managing, you know, is what I did yesterday, creating the value I said it would today, and being accountable to that.
Yeah, that whole onboarding of the practice has just another layer of due diligence attached to it than we traditionally do in a healthcare system. Well, Angela, I think I could talk to you for hours about this because it's just fascinating to me, and I know it's going to be to others as well. So I really appreciate your taking the time, and we've known each other for a long time, so it's been great to reconnect with you as well. I think it's going to spark interest in a lot of other people to really think twice about these professional options in addition to practice management inside healthcare systems. It's a whole nother layer of professional opportunity that I'm not sure we probably explore enough.
Yes. Well, it's been a pleasure, Allison. I really love sharing my experience with you, and I hope, you know, your listeners have found it helpful, and you know, they can apply something to their journey. So thank you.
Exactly. Thank you, Angela.
All right. Thanks, Allison.